Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Betts with Gordon Chang, and we're very pleased to be joined by Professor Jim Holmes of the U.S. Naval War College, who's going to help us carefully understand where the U.S. Navy is now with a worldwide phenomenon called rearmament. Jim, I report to you from reporting from Europe that the Financial Times, within these last hours, a banner headline about the defense industries of European countries coming alive. And how did they know this? Because it's all national security. They use commercial satellite photos overhead of then and now of three countries where they know are factories that turn out either weaponry or ammunition or something related with defense matters. The three countries were Germany, Finland, and Britain. And in each instance, they found the footprint of the facility, industrial facility, growing remarkably, and evidence of more construction underway. The rearmament follows the promises made at NASA, at NATO, for growth of the budgets for defense from all of the NATO countries from maybe 1.5% now to 5%, including 1.5% for infrastructure and 3.5% for weapons. Okay. They're following through, according to the FT, in some fashion. I then add that to a report I have from Turkey that the Turkish military is growing very quickly and that they're building not only drones, attack drones, that have been used successfully in the Armenia-Azerbaijan conflict and are for sale, I believe, throughout Africa, but they're also building what they call as a hyperdrive missile and tanks, lots of tanks. I saw them in the assembly line and other equipment of war, including a warplane. That is four instances now of countries associated with NATO building and building for war. You have an article in the National Interest that is excellently well-timed about drones for the U.S. Navy. That would require budgeting, would require something shorter than the usual acquisition timeline of 5 years. It would require haste because that's the way the FT and Turkey put their war footing now. They're building fast. They're growing fast. Something like the arsenal of democracy in 1940. Is it happening for the U.S. Navy, Jim? Good evening to you.
Hey, Gordon. Hey, John. A pleasure as always. Yes, it is happening. I don't think it's happening as fast as it needs to. I mean, keep in mind that the Navy leadership under successive leaders has basically put us on a timeline reaching all the way back to when Admiral Davidson, the Indo-Pacific Command commander back in 2021, declared that China could attack Taiwan within 6 years, i.e. by 2027. People within the Beltway have identified 2027 as the time of maximum danger in our competition with China and vowed to get ready by then. We know that Xi Jinping has declared or has instructed the People's Liberation Army to be ready to go. I don't actually think that there's sort of an automatic go time in 2027, but that does seem to be the consensus on this side. So we need to be moving fast. In my particular article, I was basically handing a megaphone to an author over at the Naval Institute Proceedings who lamented the new directive out of the Pentagon to focus mostly on UASs or unmanned aerial vehicles and less so on unmanned surface vehicles. He was very exercised that the Navy seems to be very irresolute about funding and procuring unmanned surface vehicles such as the type we've seen Ukraine use to great effect in the Black Sea. So I sort of broke it down and I said, look, there are basically two types of unmanned surface vehicles. Some resemble munitions more. Those are things that we can buy in bulk in the next 18 months to 24 months. As far as the platform, the ones that more resemble warships, traditional warships, and I don't think we're quite there, and I don't think we're going to get there in the next 18 months. So more or less, we need to focus on the ones that look more like munitions, because that's what we can use to deny control of the sea to a Chinese invasion fleet in the Taiwan Strait or wherever the battleground happens to be.
Gordon, you have a question for Jim.
Jim, if there is going to be a war, I think that it probably will be this decade. If we get through this next few years, I think we're going to be much better. We have a U.S. Navy, though, that is spending enormous resources on building Ford-class carriers, which will not be commissioned until next decade. We don't seem to have a Navy that is focused on meeting a challenge now. Why is that? What is it with the Navy leadership that prevents it from focusing on the threat that is more real than other threats they're looking at?
Well, I mean, there's no one simple answer to that. It's not just one thing. It's a variety of things. I mean, for example, there's a story just in the Naval Institute's news website just this morning pointing out that the Navy, in the design of its next generation destroyer and submarines, is going to actually take back control of the design process, much as we did for many decades, including during the Second World War, rather than entrust that function to industry and bank on industry to actually produce a design that actually does what the Navy leadership wants it to do. So there's that aspect. But I think the bigger point that you're hinting at is cultural in nature. I've actually been kind of shocked at how little shock effect the Russia-Ukraine war has had, not only on the Navy but really on all of us the last 3 years since Russia invaded. I always liken the situation back to the 1940, when the fall of France precipitated a massive, as you pointed out, a massive buildup of the arsenal of democracy, including the Two Ocean Navy Act of 1940, under which Congress essentially bankrolled the construction of a second U.S. Navy, bigger and better and shinier and more powerful than the pre-war fleet. You haven't seen that sort of galvanic effect out of the Russia-Ukraine war. I can think of various reasons why, but it does seem like the invasion of a major European state would have had that kind of impact and urged us to get ready. John mentioned the 5% NATO spending figure. We have a long way to go before we get there. We're sitting at more like 3% ourselves, which implies about a 60% boost in defense budgets if we're going to honor our own commitments. So there's also that aspect as well.
Jim, in your article in National Interest, you point us to Julian Corbett's masterwork, Some Principles of Maritime Strategy, dated 1911. What's in there, Jim, that we can learn when we come to buying drones?
Yeah, well, I mean, he was talking about Corbett, of course, was writing at the time when small surface patrol craft, torpedo boats, and of course submarines, both armed with torpedoes and mines, could go out and land heavy blows against major enemy navies. So, and he thought that was a great thing for a power that just needed to deny a stronger sea power control of the sea in order to accomplish its goals. This sea denial function was really good enough. I see drones of all types as sea denial platforms for our own ultra modern age, and that's why I think that. Not only unmanned aerial vehicles and subsurface vehicles, but also smaller sea denial platforms riding the surface. I think that's the way to go because, again, I think you can actually scale that up. There's a lot of places that can build them, given ample resources and political impetus to do so. So I think that's probably our bet. That's probably our safest bet rather than continue experimenting with bigger, more ship like capabilities.
He divides the fleet.
Going to be in the water.
He divides the fleet into battle fleet, cruisers, and flotilla. You're saying the emphasis should be on the flotilla. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. The battle fleet today would be your aircraft carriers, your destroyers, cruisers, and whatnot. And the cruiser contingent is a little blurry since his time, but certainly the flotilla. These are plentiful, low cost platforms that can go out and deal out heavy blows against an enemy capital ship fleet, or in the case of Taiwan, a Taiwanese invasion fleet. The strategic goal in the Taiwan Strait, we need to keep our mind always on that, is to basically keep that fleet from getting across to Taiwan. Taiwan. Everything else, I think, has to be subsidiary to that. That has to be the priority, and drones can help us do that.
Gordon, we have about a minute.
So, Jim, we have a new Secretary of Navy and a new Chief of Naval Operations. Are they on board with what needs to be done?
I think so. The Secretary himself has paid. He's paid a lot of attention. I forget what the figure is, but he's spent an inordinate amount of time since taking office visiting shipyards, doing things like help expedite Japanese and especially South Korean entry into the U.S. shipbuilding market. For example, Hanwha Ocean has acquired Philly Shipyard adjacent to the old Philadelphia Naval Shipyard and has started to do naval work there, mostly commercial work at this point, but with the aim of breaking into warships as well. So he's focused more on the traditional fleet. The CNO, the new CNO, Admiral Cottle, is new to the post. Haven't seen too much out of him because I think he's just finding his footing. But I'm almost certain that he will be on board with trying to expand this hybrid fleet, as the Navy calls it, trying to put about 500 hulls in the water, manned and unmanned, ultimately. But again, I think if we're in a hurry, we need to think about munitions more than hulls.
Professor Jim Holmes, the U.S. Naval War College, pointing us to an article that a book that I'm going to order immediately, Some Principles of Maritime Strategy, 1911, by Julian Corbett. Always up to date. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.